If anybody is following with the Sefer, we're in Ois Chof Hei, in Mamar Sheni Ois Chof Hei. We're beginning a new discussion. It's convenient timing because, even though we usually end in mid-sentence, it's been too much of a break. So, we're beginning a new discussion. Omar HaKuzari, Yaspikli Be'inyin Azeh. Everything we've discussed up till now, the previous discussion was about Eretz Yisrael. We've discussed enough of this. Now I want to move on to another subject. I want you to try to familiarize me a little bit with the concept of Karbonis, which is, in my mind, a very strange concept. It's a very tough thing for the mind to accept the way the concept of Karbonis is expressed in the Pasuk. And what's that? Because the Pasuk says, Es Karboni lach mi le'ishai reach nichoichi. My Karbon, Hashem says, my bread. Hashem is asking us to serve him bread. Okay? For my fires to produce a pleasing smell. Omar la karbonis came karbon Hashem velachmoy verechoy. The karbonis are referred to as the karbon of Hashem and his bread and a pleasant smell for him, as though we're serving Hashem. Hashem is asking us to feed him. And what is he eating? Beef? Steaks? What is the concept of karbonis? And how do we understand the concept of serving Hashem bread? Amar HaChover. The Chover answers. And here we get into the fundamental essence of what karbonis are, according to the Kuzari. There are a few classic approaches. One of them is that of the Kuzari. Masha Omar Li Yishai Miyasha Kol Kosher. Most of the words in this pasuk, where it says, my karbon, my bread, etc., are difficult. But there's one word in the pasuk, which we just read, that puts it all into perspective. What's that? It's my fires. Said, my bread for my fires. He didn't say, my bread for me. He said, I want you to take my bread and feed it to my fires. Ah. Now, that still doesn't explain things to us. But it already answers one question, and that is, how could you talk about feeding Hashem? The answer is, it's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk talks about feeding my fires. Now, what that means, we have yet to discuss. What is it saying? Oimer, ki hakorban ahu ve'alechem ve'reach hanichoyach ashehem biyuchosim elai omnom heim le'isha. Yes. The karbanis that I'm telling you to bring me, yes, I want you to offer me karbanis, but feed them to my fires. Which means what? You remember, we've discussed earlier in Kuzari, the concept of Hashem manifesting His presence through certain means that we can actually see. One of the classic examples of that was the fire. The fire was one of the classic examples of Hashem showing the presence of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah manifested through the fire. In the Beis HaMikdash, a fire came down from Shemayim and rested on the Mizbeach. And this was the representation of the presence of the Shekhinah. And therefore, as we've discussed earlier in the Sefer, people would actually bow to these things. The fire, the cloud, right? That represented the presence of Hashem. But was it Hashem Himself? Everybody understands that not. So Hashem says, I want you to offer me karbanis by feeding them to... or more accurately, by having that fire consumed it. That's your way of showing your dedication to me. So are you feeding Hashem? Of course not. All you're doing is, you are feeding before Kohen, your relationship with Hashem. That's what you're doing when you're feeding the Korbanos. And he's going to elaborate on this a little bit more now. What's that? Oh, so let's ask a question. When you buy your wife a birthday present, it's a matter of feeding the relationship. Why should it matter what you buy her? Right? Like we discussed all the way at the beginning. Guy comes home and says, honey, I have the guest birthday present for you. The answer, two tickets to the Sunday football game. One for her and one for him, of course. Right? So Shkoyach, you got me a birthday present. You have to work in terms of the person who I have a relationship with. You can't dictate to them how the relationship should work. Hashem said it works with sheep of this age, in this state, etc. You're going to come and say, well, Hashem, I don't understand why you need all that. That's like the guy who comes and tells his wife, I don't understand what flowers are important for. What can you do with them? Right? If you want to, they die in a few days. That's my attitude. There are much better things you can do with those 30 shekel. Right? But certainly if you're talking about a 70 shekel bouquet. But that doesn't feed the relationship. Right? No, buy a package of computer paper. It's much more useful than flowers. Right? So again, don't explain to Hashem what's necessary for a relationship with him. Work according to his terms. You don't understand it? Who said you have to? Like we said earlier, this is not necessarily an issue of a koi. It's an issue of understanding. That you want to have a relationship with someone who obviously you don't understand his terms. You can only work according to his terms. It's like the Kutzker Rebbe said. The Kutzker Rebbe said, I wouldn't want to worship a Hashem who I understand. If I understand him, I can do it myself. Right? The greatness of our relationship is that we have a relationship with the divine. We have a relationship with what completely supersedes any of our understanding. And therefore we work according to his terms. So now let's see. He also proves, you see that it's not about feeding Hashem, because what does Hashem say to do with a big part of his bread? Feed it to the Kohanim, right? He says, burn up these specific fats on the Mizbeach here also. It's extremely specific. Everything about Korbanos is extremely specific. These fats go on the Mizbeach, the rest the Kohanim eat. That's how you feed my bread. That's how you feed your relationship with me. Well, we're going to take it to a deeper level. And what is the objective of all this? It's not to satisfy Hashem's hunger, chas v'shalom. Tikkun ha-seder kidei sheyachul by ha-melech chul gdula loy chul makom. The mashal that I gave about a relationship, the truth is a superficial level of understanding what we're seeing. But the truth is that there's more to it. Hashem is saying as follows. If you want to feed my connection to you, more than just a relationship, it takes certain things in order to keep me among you. That's what we mean by feeding the relationship. And therefore, what he says is, all of the details of the halachas of Korbanos have to be meticulously observed in order to create the proper state in which Hashem will be willing to reside here. So let's note, it's not just an issue of what type of beef. When we're talking about feeding our relationship with Hashem, it involves not just the right type of animal, but it also involves the right type of people. Right? It's got to be a person of a very specific lineage, at a very specific age, with a very specific physical state, who's wearing very specific clothing. All that is also involved in feeding that relationship. Why is all that important? Because once again, Hashem says, my Shechina can only rest on earth if it's exactly according to these guidelines.
Why?
What's that?
Why
so specific? And there we come back to the point that we made before. Since we're dealing with a mechanism, with a relationship, with a whole dynamic that's way above us, we don't need to know. Well, as for example, right? there are certain foods, certain nutrients. Right? When you're dealing with the human body, it's the same thing. Specific nutrients have specific properties that are good for specific conditions or specific parts of the body. Why is it like that? Because you don't need to know why in order to make it work. Right? You see that this is what has this effect. So Hashem is saying, in order to nourish spirituality, divine presence in this world, this is what it takes. So now, he says, "Chul gdula v'loy chul makom." This is what brings the Shekhinah down, the Shekhinah's presence down to us, in a qualitative way, not in a quantitative way. Meaning, on the contrary, the fact that the Shekhinah does come and rest in the Beis HaMikdash actually raises it above all confines of physicality. That's why, for example, we have that most puzzling phenomenon in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that the Aron didn't take a place. It appeared to be an optical illusion. The Aron did not occupy place. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 feet by 20 feet. The Aron was sitting right in the middle, but if you measured on both sides of it, it was 10 feet on each side. There was no space occupied. Something the human eye can't grasp, because it was above the laws of the physical world. This was a manifestation of the Shekhinah that was residing there. It caused the Beis HaMikdash, when everything was done right, when all the plugs were plugged in right, which is all these myriads of details, yes, it raised the Beis HaMikdash to a place much higher. It's kind of like the mushroom we gave the other time, you know, when you have the computer. I'm talking in a very superficial way with my computer. You want to connect the computer to the monitor, right? So there are a few plugs you have to plug in. It's like six things you have to plug in. I have to get this one into that place, that one into that place, that one into that place. This activates the audio, that activates the video. Other things activate, I don't know what. But you have to have each one plugged in the right way, and then you create a new reality on your screen. So here we're talking about a lot of plugs that need to be plugged in. But once you have them all plugged in exactly right, the Beis HaMikdash turns into a different place. The Shekhinah is actually residing there, and the whole reality becomes a different reality. So now, Mitzum Dinyan HaInyan HaLoiki. Now, if you want a muscle for this, compare it to HaNefesh HaMidaberes HaChola BeGuf Tivi Baham. Compare it to the Neshama. The Neshama connects with your body. What's your body? 120 to 200 pounds of flesh, meat, right? Now you want to create a situation where the Neshama will connect to it and be sustained. Connect to it in a permanent way. How do you do that? There are very physical instructions to keeping your neshama connected to your body. What are they? Eat enough? Sleep enough? What? Not necessarily. To keep the neshama connected to the body, you don't need to do that. What? You don't need to learn Torah. You don't need to do mitzvahs. The neshama will be connected to the body. I'm talking on a certain level, okay? Obviously, what you're saying is correct. But I want to just show one thing. Person is alive because he's got a neshama connected to. Take the worst Rishayim around today. Take Yair Lapid. Okay? There. This man, he's got his neshama connected. I don't know, maybe he's probably already managed to sever the connection. But whatever it is, a certain level of nefesh is there. How do you keep that connection? By keeping your body alive. As long as you eat food, your nefesh remains connected to your body. You get very holy, fast for 4 days straight, and you lose the connection to your nefesh. The nefesh will sail away, and they'll carry the person to bury it. Right? So now, here also we see that it takes physical food to sustain the connection between the neshama and the body. But does the neshama actually require food? The neshama is fine without the food. Just what? It leaves the body. But it's fine. it's in as healthy a state as it was when it was connected to the body. The food is not affecting the neshama at all. What is it affecting? It's through the food that you keep the neshama connected to the body. But the neshama in and of itself doesn't need the food at all. It's fine without it. Just, it'll leave the body if there isn't that food. So the food is nourishing the connection, but it's not nourishing the neshama. That's the idea with when we talk about the bread of Hashem. What are we feeding? We're feeding the connection of Hashem to us. We're not feeding Hashem Himself. Hashem says, if you want to draw me, to keep me connected to you in the Beis HaMikdash, it's through these means.
The connection is the body?
Well, in the case of the neshama, it's the body. In the case here, it's the Beis HaMikdash. In the same way, you have to nourish the body with food in order to keep the neshama connected. You have to nourish your relationship with Hashem. You have to nourish the Beis HaMikdash with all the proper avodas in order to keep the Shekhinah present. Otherwise, the Shekhinah floats away.
So what differentiates a Rasha from a non-Rasha? The Shama is saying the Shama.
That's a complex discussion. Here we get on to what you raised. Where does learning Torah come into it? So the truth is that, okay, if we'll get go a little bit esoteric here for a minute. What's that? Well, and then he said before that in order to sustain your connection to your neshama, you need to learn Torah. And I said, not necessarily. A Rasha also, as long as he's alive, he's got his neshama connected. And then I said, this is what Avraham is asking, that the neshama is fine with or without that nourishment. Right? Just that it leaves. In other words, implying that the neshama is what it is regardless of what you do. He's asking, so what then is the difference between a tzaddik and a Rasha? Where is the effect if not in the neshama? So, it's a bit of a complex discussion. I'll just answer it in a general way. The way the Jew works is you have your body, and then on top of that there's a more spiritual level of who you are, and on top of that there's a more spiritual level of who you are, and on top of that there's a more spiritual level of who you are, which is basically not infinite but almost infinite, meaning there are very, very many levels. In a very basic way we'll call it, there's the body, then there's the nefesh, then there's the ruach, then there's the neshama, then there's the chaya, then there's the yechid, that goes up and up and up and up. The further up it goes, the more spiritual it is, the more removed it is from anything physical. The further up you go, also, it's becoming less and less you. At a certain place, it kind of merges with the collective neshama of the Jewish people. That's what we call Knesset Yisrael. You're still having an effect there, by the way, because kind of think of it, we'll use a very coarse mushel, kind of think of an octopus shape. Okay, this is a very coarse mushroom. Right, there's the collective body, and then there are the offshoots that go down, coming down, down, descending into each of us. And each of us, through what we do, we are affecting what's going on all the way up. Okay? But it's only up to a certain level. There's a level of the neshama that is who it is, and you can't really touch it. It's very high up. But you are going to manifest in the lower levels that are affected by the deeds that you do. And therefore, what Karetz really is, for example, is... Yeah. But ultimately, where does it all connect up to? Ultimately, it connects up to Hashem, right? Ultimately, it reaches a place of just pure divinity. Right? It's just becoming more and more and more and more physical until it culminates in you. But there is a point where you're not touching it all. Your averus don't affect it, your mitzvahs don't affect it. Your mitzvahs affect up to a certain point, and that's really the existence that you're creating for yourself ultimately, connected with Hashem. The concept of karis is when you slowly work at chipping away at your connection, if we'll talk in terms of a tentacle, with that highest of places, until you actually successfully sever it. And then, call it your nefesh, your ruach, etc., simply gets detached, drops down, and the person is finished. But the higher level of his neshama never managed to touch. So, really, it's the lower levels that you're affecting. But, okay, that was really in parentheses. What's that? No, no, no. That when a person experiences primarily is the Ruach. So lower levels of the Neshama you are primarily experiencing. Talking after that. Therefore, the levels of your Nefesh, of your Ruach, of the lower levels of your Neshama, the ones that are more accessible to you, are primarily what your existence is going to be there. Alright. Call that, leave that in parentheses. The general way to get the idea. Now, so here also he says, Kasha Nishtavu Tva, when a person is properly healthy, when a person, in the physical sense, is properly set up, physically taken care of, etc., then he can be zoiche to the presence of this neshama. Now the truth is here also, he's talking on two levels. Really there are two levels here. What I said before about Yair Lapid with his nefesh is really talking about the most basic animalistic level of the nefesh. But the truth is that yes, the higher levels of the neshama, you require more in order to keep them connected to you. Like we said, in order to keep the basic, what we call the nefesh habahami, the most basic levels of spirituality that's your vitality, that's your life, it's enough to simply nourish it with food. But in order to keep connected to those higher levels, in order to access those higher levels, you certainly do need to be nourishing it with spirituality. Whatever it is, what we're saying is that yes, there are divine beings that are connected to your body. How? Through your physical setup, through your physical nourishment, through your physical care for yourself. And this chaber etzloi will connect to you. Kol esa sheyishayar aseidahu. For as long as you maintain that proper physical state, because yipaseid aseida, yipareid mimenu. As soon as that proper physical state is disbanded, when the person stops eating, when the systems of the body start breaking down, that divine neshama floats away, right? So to the superficial person, it looks like the spark of life turned off. But the truth is, that's not what happened. The spark of life simply ascended. Because it's not the food that keeps the spark of life alight. It's not the food that keeps the neshama alive. It's the food that keeps the neshama connected to the body. The kemedume laksil, it might appear to the fool, he's referring to the neshama as seichel. This is a very common concept in the Kadmoni. We'll maybe elaborate on it soon. That the seichel, the man's intellect, is actually the manifestation of the neshama. Whatever it is, it might seem to the fool that the neshama is dependent on the food, because you see that when a person's dead, the neshama is no more, it's extinguished. Well, the reya, it needs the food, the drink, everything. Because he sees that the neshama continues to exist here as long as the food continues going, as long as the body is in its proper state, and that it's no longer here once the upkeep is no longer going on. But it isn't really true. So why is it not true? Because again, it's not the neshama itself, it's not the nefesh itself that you're nourishing, it's the nefesh's connection to your body that you're nourishing. So the same goes for the divine, the same goes for spirituality, the same goes for the higher levels of the neshama in the person. Yes, you need to feed your higher level of neshama, your spiritual neshama, with mitzvahs, with Torah, etc. But for what purpose? It's in order to remain connected to it. So yes, the divine presence also is there, ready to benefit any conscientious person. sheistader dovah. When a person keeps himself spiritually fit, the kindly kabel hanagosa, and he really puts himself in position to be able to conform to the neshama's requirements. Right, the neshama has requirements. You have to conform to those requirements in order to keep a healthy connection to the neshama. So, la'imana mimeno lahatfil alav or the chokma v'da'as. If you keep up, if you maintain the upkeep of the neshama, if you conform to the neshama's requirements, yes, it'll remain connected to you, and it'll continue showering you with spiritual welfare, with continued growth, with continued inspiration and insight. Because she possesses syndrome, but if a person does not maintain that upkeep, whether it's the requirements of the nefesh or the requirements of the neshama, the kabbalah or ahuvi ef seva. Again, on the two levels, we'll talk on the two levels. In order for your nefesh to remain connected to you, it has expectations of you. It expects you to eat. It expects you to keep yourself alive. If you don't, if you kill yourself, if you starve yourself to death, the nefesh will leave. Nefesh won't stay with you. Also with the neshama. You don't conform to the neshama's requirements on the spiritual level, it'll leave you. Now, vis Allah in you loiki. Now, when we say that the Shekhinah connects with you if you conform to its standards, the Shekhinah departs from you if you don't. So once again, by conforming to the Shekhinah's standards, you're not nourishing the Shekhinah. You have the means of keeping the Shekhinah connected to you by conforming to its standards, which is feeding its connection with you. But the Shekhinah doesn't need your nourishment. And this is the way it works with the Karbanos as well. When we say that the Karbanos are the bread of Hashem, what that means is the Shekhinah connects with Klal Yisrael if we nourish that connection. We nourish that connection through the Karbanos, through the bread that we feed that connection. But are we feeding the Shekhinah? Is the Shekhinah healthier because we're feeding it those Karbanos? No. It's not a question of the Shekhinah's welfare. It's only a question of, will the Shekhinah remain connected or not? If you starve your relationship with the Shekhinah, if you don't feed it the Karbanos, if you don't conform to all the requirements, the Shekhinah will depart. But the Shekhinah is fine. Just you lose that connection. So yes, the Karbanos are meant to nourish. But to nourish what? To nourish the Shekhinah? No. They are nourishing the Shekhinah's connection to us. They're nourishing the presence of the Shekhinah with us in the Beit HaMikdash. So this applies to all of the different details that are involved in the full scope of the Avodah. All of the different elements of the Avodah, which are very complex. What is it all? It is, I won't use the word frenzied, but it's a very, very high level meaning physically. Not frenzied, that's a bit of too strong of a word, but more than meticulous. Feverish, I don't know what you call it. But a very, you're the word man, you're the word man. No, it's energetic. That's the word I think we're looking for. It requires very high energy activity on the part of the Kohanim in order to constantly be feeding that connection everything he needs. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash is a place of intense activity. Everything moved very, very fast and had to be done with utmost precision because the Shekhinah's requirements are very great. And if you wanted to hold on to the Shekhinah, that had to 24/7 be maintained with utmost meticulousness and with speed and with energy, constantly feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. And that way it stayed. And this was what was behind the Seder Avodah. The Avodahs, all the different forms of Avodah they had to do. Right? The Shechita had to be done just right. Catching the blood, carrying the blood, throwing of the blood exactly in the right places. Right? All the process of the Mincha, touching it to the right place. What difference does it make? It says you're supposed to touch before bringing the mitzvah. You're supposed to touch it to a specific corner of the mizbeach. What if I touch it to a different corner of the mizbeach? Isn't it all the same idea? No, again, when you're talking about the Shekhinah has very, very specific requirements. It's kind of like saying, right? Let's say there's a password to a computer. You're off by one digit, the phone number. Okay, when you're making a local phone call, 7 digits. You're off by 1 digit. Okay, it's a 7th of the whole thing. You're calling Chutz Laaretz, 15 digits. If I'm off by 1, does it really matter? Yes, it's the difference between getting through to your kid or getting through to some Puerto Rican. It's a difference between 1 and 2? Yeah, it's a difference between 1 and 2. That's the idea between all the fine details of the Seder Avodah. Hashem says, yes, there are very, 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 very specific password that has to be accessed. Very specific details, very specific buttons that have to be pushed in order for this to work. And that involves, in this case, thousands of buttons that have to be done just right.
Much of a relationship. Sometimes relationships are nurtured by like going for a walk in the park. I mean, that's how we understand it. So like you're describing a very frenzied, energetic activity, but I can also see a relationship happening at a much slower pace than looking at the stars.
Okay, you're making a good point. So
like,
here,
that's not suited for everyone, especially when, you know.
Okay, so you're asking a good question. This is about sustaining our relationship with Hashem. Does our relationship with Hashem boil down to that energetic, fast-paced? No, it looked like in the Beis Hamikdash. No, the description of the by the Korban Pesach with the when they passed the way it worked was it was done on a very, very large scale. Just in order to bring your question home even more, then we'll get to the answer. But it was done on a very, very large scale. They were shechting. You have to realize it was the only time of the year when every last, well, not individual, but every 5 or 6 individuals had to bring a korban. It was the busiest time of the year, Erev Pesach. Like it was packed. And the kahanim was, the Pesachs were being slaughtered one after the other, and each one had to have its blood carried to the Mizbeach and thrown to the Mizbeach. So how'd they do it? What they did was, they had a long line of kahanim, and they passed it from one to the other. But it went so fast that you couldn't even make out the vessels. This was all done without spilling a drop. Right? The Kahanim was so well trained, so precise. And this was the activity that was required. It was this sort of activity that went on all the time. The Kahanim were known for both their intense speed and their meticulousness. So, does this do for an ongoing, regular relationship? So the answer is that, let's remember, we're talking in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kahanim. Hashem's relationship spread to the humble Jew living all the way down in some far corner of Eretz Yisrael by himself. And there, the relationship could be more slow-paced. There, the relationship was more about Hashem showing his love for him by giving him a beautiful crop of grapes. Right? But Hashem's relationship with the Jewish people manifests individually, but it's really stemming from that collective relationship that he has with the Jews. Hashem rests his Shechina upon the Jewish people as a whole, and from there the individual draws his relationship with Hashem. There's no such thing as you on your own. Any relationship that you have with Hashem, you're drawing from Hashem's relationship with the Jewish people as a whole, and that funnels down to a very personal and intimate relationship with you. So the first thing that we have to do in order for this to work is first establish the main power center, right? The electricity that you have in your home doesn't necessarily have to be on such a major charge as it has to be in the central generators of national electricity, right? So there has to be a much, much higher charge in these centers. And then from there, it can be a bit of a lower flame in your house. The Beis HaMikdash was the place where they were actually channeling the influx of Shekhinah into this world. That's what they're bringing into this world. Kiviyachol, if we use other terms, it was the satellite dish that actually brought it in. Okay? That had to be done in the most intense way possible. From there, it was able to funnel down to the humble individual wherever he might live, to the woman, to the child. What's that? Even at the time of Bamas, there was always the central Bama, which was once again where it channeled. There was the Mishkan, but there was never a period where there wasn't the Mishkan. From time beginning, Hashem said, "Va'atzuli Mishkan v'shachanti b'seichem." The Mishkan, the Beis Hamikdash, is the power center, and from there it flows, it channels to the individual. Let's talk about. These are further examples of this idea. The tiniest detail being off when you're talking about the main power center messes up the whole system. Or, now we talk power center, let's give another mashal for it. Where the Shekhinah is actually entering this world is also the most sensitive place of all. Think of it in another term. When you're in a trucking warehouse, there's one level of sensitivity you have to have. When you're in a trucking warehouse, you don't have to wear latex gloves, and you don't have to sterilize everything around, right? But when you're in a room where a brain surgery is going on, where the tiniest germ gets into the wrong place, and in a better case, it only causes blindness, right? When you're talking about an open heart surgery, they need absolute sterility, right? You need everything to be on the most sensitive level. So therefore, that's also an example of thinking everything has to be just so. The tiniest thing being off there messes everything up, right? And therefore, Pigel, yes, like you said, it's not just the Kohanim doing everything exactly right, but it's even about them thinking exactly right. And not only that, there's the level of, like you're saying, Pigel, where the thoughts that will invalidate the carbon, but there's also more than that. Once you're on the level of valid, right, you made it, there's also a lot more levels. Depending on the intensity of the Kohanim's concentration, it can be of a higher quality or lower quality. Meaning, the more intense dedication they put into their avodah, even after it's already passed the threshold of kosher, Shekhinah is there. Shekhinah is not measured in terms of quantity, but of quality. Therefore, the more intensity they put into it, the more dedication they put into it, the stronger of a quality Shekhinah they're bringing into Klal Yisrael. This was the responsibility that the Kohen Gadol carried on Yom Kippur. The whole connection of the Shekhinah, the intensity of the Shekhinah's connection with the Jewish people, the quality of the Shekhinah's connection with the Jewish people, all rested on his shoulders. And in a general way, it rests on the shoulders of the Kohanim who are performing the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. The more intense, the more dedicated their Avodah is, the stronger will be the presence of the Shekhinah there, and the stronger will be the Shekhinah that can reach every individual. So yes, we're talking about a very serious business of nourishing that relationship. Nourishing the Shekhinah? No. But nourishing the relationship. Nourishing the connection. So, have I answered your question? Oh, okay. So now, so everything about the Avodah, with the myriads of details, all the different types of Avodahs, the HaKarbanot, the Karbanot themselves, this Karban has to be this type, that one that type. And not only does it have to be the right species, it's got to be exactly the right age. And not only exactly the right age, the exact right physical state, etc. Right? Vakteres. Right? The Vakteres, it's all field in itself. Vazmiris. These have to be accompanied by the singing of the Levian, which also had all kinds of halachas and details and kosher and not kosher. Right? Vamachol. Vamishte. The foods and the drinks that the Kohanim had to be involved with. Al Tachlis HaTara V'Akdusha, which all had to be performed with the utmost meticulousness about the laws of purity. Ad Sheneimar Bahem, Avodas Hashem, V'Lechem Elokecha, V'Zulos Yisrael. And indeed, when referring to all these things, we use the term serving Hashem, which again, on a superficial level, can imply that we're tending to Hashem's needs, or the bread of your God. Saying, no, that's not what it means. We're not tending to Hashem's needs. We're not tending to Hashem's needs because we're not feeding Hashem by serving him fattened bulls on the Mizbeach. But in one sense, it is serving Hashem. Why? Because he wants that connection with us. He wants that connection with us, yet he leaves it in our hands. And in that sense, we are serving him. We're not serving him food, we're serving him the connection, so to speak. Because he wants that connection, the ultimate connection, the best state it can be with the nation as a whole and through the Kayan. And when we talk, that's what it means when we say that he accepts it lovingly. He accepts it lovingly means he says, yes, you please me with this avodah, therefore I'm coming to be here with you. And he honors their efforts by indeed gracing the Beis HaMikdash with his glorious presence. And this is the ultimate that the Jewish people can hope for. That yes, they earned Hashem's favor by doing things exactly as he likes it. Right? That's the point here. Exactly as he likes it, with utmost meticulousness and precision. Exactly as he ordered, he rewards that with that immense honor of gracing them with his presence. That he indeed establishes that Beis HaMikdash that we built for them as Kiviyachol, his quarters on earth. Where does Hashem live? He has an apartment among us. Kiviyachol. He is certainly completely elevated and above min ha'anav ma'acholam u'mishtem, from enjoying the food or drink. You think that he's enjoying the smell, the great smell of the meat roasting on the Mizbeach, and there's the wine being poured, and the minchas being poured out, all kinds of appetizing things going on. Is the idea that, he's enjoying it? Certainly not. Certainly the real point is that this food is feeding themselves. The food is feeding the Kayhanim. How's that? Kemoshe Ikolait Stunka. Vakobi Kasha Hayavitkan. Just like in the mashal of the body. By feeding things to the body. And by them being broken down. And being distributed among the different organs of the body. That causes the neshama to retain its connection with the body. Right? So it's a very physical process. But the outcome is spiritual. That's what's going on also here. When we're busy offering the Karbanos, what are we feeding? We're feeding ourselves. Because by nourishing this whole business, we're keeping the Shekhinah connected to us. So he goes through the different details of how it works with the body, breaking down the food until ultimately it will properly host the Neshama. The point being, that when a person puts his body into the right state to be able to accommodate, to be able to house the soul, which doesn't really need this food, it doesn't connect to this food, which essentially is something completely physical, it's more like a malach, doesn't need this food. It says about them, when it moves the nefesh, it doesn't dwell with the physical. Yet, the yachul, the guf, chul malachusoy, vanhoga, loy chul malachusoy. Yet, through all this physical activity, the neshama will reside in. And even though the neshama demands that you eat in order for it to stay with you, it doesn't enjoy that food, it doesn't taste the food. Because it's way above it. So the same goes for Hashem with us, as we'll continue and see next week.